You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you. With professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
So you want to be a rock and roll star? No? Well, how about a podcast star? Well, as it turns out, there's a new all-in-one platform just for you. It's called Anchor, and it's the easiest way to make a podcast. And check this out, it's free. There's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer, and then Anchor will distribute the podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify and Apple Podcast and, you know, everywhere else in podcast land. And what's even better, you can actually make money from your podcast. Go figure. No minimum listenership on that. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So go ahead, download the free Anchor app right now or go to anchor.fm to get started. So what are you waiting for? Podcast stardom is within your reach.
Do you read Stephen King? Good news. There's a club for you. The Losers Club. Every Friday, us losers journey through the never-ending wastelands of King's Dominion. We sink our teeth into each of King's novels, dive deep into the lore, and review every adaptation. Even better, we're always having guests over. Thomas Jane, Will Wheaton, Mary Lambert, Mick Garris, the list goes on. So what are you waiting for? Join us as we read on through long days and pleasant nights.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith with the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org. Consequence of Sound on the Consequence Podcast Network. First off, thank you so much for making your way here, checking out this episode. If you're not already, I hope you like what you hear enough to subscribe to the series. We put out three brand new interviews every single week, a new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. So if you do dig this kind of thing, hit that subscribe button. It's a great way to keep up with all of your favorite artists, discover some new ones, and know what's happening in the music world. Of course, you can find us at all the major podcasting spots like iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube as well, where you'll find the video version of this interview right here. I'm Kyle Meredith. Today, I'm talking with the band Painted Shield. If that doesn't sound familiar, it's because, well, they're sort of new. Stone Gossard from Pearl Jam, Mason Jennings, they've got together, well, first off, a few years ago for a little 7-inch single, but now full-on self-titled record. We're going to talk about their creation story, Mason for the first time being in a band and having to collaborate with folks, picking up Matt Chamberlain on drums and working with John Congleton, famous for producing folks like St. Vincent. How Stone really opened up his vault of demos for a lot of the songs on here. And lyrically, how Jennings uses manipulating time sort of as a bit of escapism in our world. Now, outside of the record, it's also the return of Loose Groove Records, which Stone Gossard started years ago with Regan Hagar, his old Brad bandmates. And it's with that in mind that we hear that there is one more Brad record. Sean Smith passed away just recently, but there's some vocals and the band's putting together for a final Brad record. So we're going to talk about that, as well as Loose Groove putting out a 1982 record that featured a very young Duff McKagan of Guns N' Roses, pre-Guns N' Roses fame, of course. Mason Jason also tells us about his next record, working on that, and the possibility of more Painted Shill albums, which sounds like a real possibility. And then, of course, talking with Stone, we're going to bring up Pearl Jam. Not being able to tour Gigaton, their latest album, his anxiety dreams about when they finally do, and how the band is slowing down, the possibility of more box sets, and recording more music. So let's jump into it and talk about Painted Shill. It's Kyle Meredith with Stone Gossard and Mason Jennings.
Hello.
Hello. Thanks for having us.
No, it's great to see you both. So I was trying to work it out in my head if I wanted to say new band, because while the debut record is on the way, this isn't exactly actually new, right? This does stretch back a few years. How did this start? Either one of you want to take that.
Yeah, it's been about 6 years. We had a mutual friend, Dan Field, who introduced us, and you know, we're both interested in collaborating. Stone had some recordings that he was maybe looking to have somebody sing on, and I was, you know, had done so much solo stuff, and I was like, I'd like to work with someone and try some collaborative recordings. So that's when it started, and it just sort of blossomed over the last 6 years.
But 6 years, I mean, to do a couple songs, and then as I read, I think, you know, one day in the studio together at all, you know, since then. Stone, is that an odd way to collaborate?
I've never done it like this before, so it's different, and I don't think we either of us saw the big picture 6 years ago, but we saw the small picture was, you know, the small picture was we did Knife Fight and it sounded great, and we were like, wow, that was instantaneous, and like I just had this demo that I had recorded with Josh Fries on drums and me playing some bass, and it was pretty quick and down and dirty, and he just threw a vocal on it, and it was like we were off and running. So it was I was very optimistic about the beginning, and then we did some more songs, and it was more like regular, like, okay, we got to actually kind of figure these songs out, and it wasn't instantaneous, sort of like Knife Fight. So we did some stuff, and we kind of moved a lot in that first year and tried a lot of stuff, and then maybe we took a couple of years where we were sort of like, I don't even know how much we talked over, at least a year or two of it. And then we started, you know, as you do, you go back in time. That's what we do. It's like, oh, I wonder if that was fun. I want to check it out again. And so we just started communicating more again and started, you know, just chipping away at some more songs. And then I think really in the last year and a half, we finally got over the hump with about three or four more really kind of instantaneous kind of tracks that just came really easy. And then the addition of Matt Chamberlain and Brittany Davis in the last year and a half, like sort of really sort of elevated it. And Matt Chamberlain started writing some songs for it. And Brittany Davis's voice and keyboard playing just really sort of added another whole nother dimension to the music. So then it started to sound more like a band, you know, because to start out with, it was a lot of me and Mason, which is fun and exciting, but it's good when it's, you know, if you're going to try to do something different, you need that. You need the influence of other perspectives. So it really worked out.
And point out, you said Matt Chamberlain, that's also, aside from being one of the greatest drummers of all time, known for being probably the shortest Pearl Jam drummer for all of, what, half a day or something like that.
It was a band era. We were, we loved Matt Chamberlain, but he was off and running and had many more stars to play with. So, which worked out great all around, but he's played with everybody, and you know, him playing with Bob Dylan is kind of the apex now, where he's like making records with Bob Dylan. He gets to talk to Bob Dylan on the phone sometimes. That's I don't know how it
works. Nobody gets to talk to Bob Dylan. He's not in it. That's that's amazing. Mason, you know, we've all been big fans of yours at WFPK for a long time. I can say that, you know, Be Here Now and Raindrops on the Kitchen Floor, I mean, for me and my wife, those are two very important songs.
Oh, thanks.
And I think I have the Always Been record here behind me. But for you, this is, I mean, from what I understand, like, this has been very different from you, you know, coming from really being a solo artist to being a collaborator. How has it changed how you've had to approach a song, if it has at all?
It's been pretty different. You know, it's definitely like, I'm used to having an instrument in my hands when I'm working on vocals, or, you know, like being able to control the chordal direction or rhythm. And at first it was definitely very, very new, but then, you know, over those 6 years, I think that's part of why it took 6 years, is that I was getting better at it. You know, I was getting more comfortable, like just figuring out what my role is with that. And it's a different kind of role. It's like, you have to kind of like let go of some stuff that I'm used to being able to control. Like, and that's something that's it's a good lesson to learn, I think, you know, because then what I'm learning is other people are going to step up. Like at first when I was doing it, I didn't know what other people were going to be bringing there because I was used to handling everything. It's like when you're used to, you know, cooking all the meals and then suddenly you have somebody doing different parts of it and it can go so much better and you can just come up with stuff that I just couldn't have done all by myself at all. So it's been a learning process what is my role? What can I work really hard on? Cause I want to work really hard, but where do I have to let go and let other people do their stuff too? And, you know, especially with like when Matt Chamberlain got involved too, like he's holding a huge, he's, you know, like a song like, I Am Your Country. Like that's mostly Matt Chamberlain's track, like musically. And then Stone and I just kind of like sit in on top of that. And that's so cool to get him involved. And then Brittany Davis too, you know, I'm used to singing all my own harmonies. I'm used to singing like, you know, like, she's singing all of those parts that I would usually have to cover and she's doing it better than me. So it's like, I'm like, oh God, this is so cool to hear it back because I, you know, her range is bigger. Her, you know, she's a better singer. Let's just say that. And so, you know, it's really cool to have it just elevate like that.
An orphan no longer, no pun intended with the album titles there, yeah. But look, you have a family.
I have a family.
It's nearly an operatic record. I think that's what surprised me the most is when all those ingredients do come together. It becomes like there are movements going on all throughout this record. Even, you know, some of the songs really line up with the other one, kind of bleed into each other. Do you all talk specifically about wanting to go someplace musically?
Hey, we don't talk. We don't break it down too much in terms of sort of why we're excited. Mostly we're like, that excites me or that's thrilling or whatever that is, you know, it's hitting me in the right way. I think a lot of the sort of the dynamics and sort of maybe, I mean, I haven't heard it described as operatic and that's exciting to think that it has an element of that in it. But I think some of that might be John Conglinton too, who's the mixer. And again, staying in, we were so rewarded by sort of opening the door for Matt and Brittany to kind of really play a bigger role than some people sort of, you know, some people aren't looking to have more opinions in a record or more sort of directions. And I think that's where we sort of pushed ourselves is to kind of go, this is going to only improve if we open our, you know, if we share it more and sort of really trust that something good can happen by having somebody else touch it. And I think we carried that into, you know, when we found out that John liked the music and was interested in mixing it. And then we found out that, you know, because of COVID that all of a sudden his schedules changed dramatically. We were, you know, we basically said to him, think of yourself as a member of the band and, you know, go into it with the attitude of I'm hearing these songs for the first time. And what would I do? You know, what, cause I know he's a player and he's mixed everything and his ear is so has a unique perspective that is going to be totally different than Mason's and I's. So we just really turned it over to him and he really pulled a lot of stuff out, made sections much more defined, took parts that we thought were the main parts and turned them off and turned up a little part that was recorded way at the beginning that was just a scratch track that all of a sudden becomes the new part. And then even hearing it back, I think the first time it's like, whoa, is this really our record now? And then you give it a week and then all of a sudden it's like, oh my God, thank you. Thank you for doing that. You just get so trapped in your own way of seeing your art when you're doing it that it takes a second to digest significant shifts in how somebody else could hear it. And so that really was, I mean, we pat ourselves on the back about that all the time in terms of like, wow, the best thing, you know, one of the best things we did was like, think John Conglinton would be great to mix it and we should let him do whatever he wants. So, and it really worked out. But I think some of that, the big dynamics are due to him. You know, he really pruned and simplified some things, but also created sort of more three-dimensionalness to the whole record in terms of just how he puts stuff in space and, it's pretty great to watch, to listen to his work.
Me, probably like a lot of people, first came aware of him because of his work with St. Vincent, and he's just become one of the most dynamic, you know, producers out there doing a lot of stuff. And you talked about being kind of close to your own music and not kind of hearing it the same way. And I purposefully put your solo record back here, Stone, with Bayleaf, because there are parts on here that really reminded me of what you were doing on Bayleaf for the first time and maybe since then. Did you, because I know, you know, from what I read anyway, a lot of these guitar parts, musical snippets or whatever do come from as, or, you know, far back as 10, 15 years ago. Did you find that you were leaning towards a certain style of yours, towards certain sounding songs to put in this project?
I'm a pack rat. So I just, you know, I write songs and then I make demos and I try to do them as kind of quickly. I wish I had weeks and months to go in the studio and hang out. But I don't know that that would actually be better for me. So when I do demos, I do them pretty down and dirty and pretty quick. And I just try to get the idea down. And so I end up with, you know, I've got hundreds of incomplete, you know, sketches. And really I was pretty irreverent with just kind of listening, you know, going through those sketches sometimes and just sending a few to Mason every once in a while. And he would either get excited about them or, you know, or wouldn't. But that was kind of the process. It was just, you know, a little bit of just kind of point and shoot and just go, I don't know, this never really got, I never really got anything on it, or I never got any farther with it. And particularly if you recorded something 10 years ago and then you listen to it quickly again, just in passing, you can really hear whether you still like it or not. You know, it's like, oh, I still like that. That's, you know, that's good. So that's a good test in terms of like something that you can remember doing. And if it doesn't move you 10 years later, it's maybe not that great. You know, it wasn't that great to start out with. So, but it's a little bit scattershot, the process. It's not too cerebral.
Yeah, well, there's some cool, I mean, there's so many cool moments on this record. First, I'll bring up Time Machine, which has this incredible groove and those horns that come out of nowhere. I mean, I actually yelled yes when that all started happening. Mason, I would like to hear about your lyrical approach on this song and a couple others too, because, I want to ask the broad question. It's sort of in the same way with Stone. Did you find yourself going in a certain direction once you all really did get started here lyrically?
Not consciously. I mean, originally it was just same thing Stone said. I was just trying. I was just like throwing stuff at it and be like, wow, that worked or that didn't work. And it was really like cool to have it be a side project because I didn't feel the pressure that like I had to be like, this is my solo record. I was just like, well, does this work? Does this work? Does this work? And then slowly over like years, I was like, what really ended up happening lyrically is that the stuff that really stuck for whatever reason was this, a lot of these themes of like unconscious stuff from the past getting worked through and brought into the present moment and then looking forward into the future. So it's like, that just sort of kind of became, which is cool because this process has been kind of that. It's like unconscious, something that took 6 years and slowly got more consciousness on it, and then we're moving into the future. And so that's kind of lyrically what stuck the most. When I look back at the theme, I'm like, there kind of is a theme there. It's just there was also a lot of weird stuff that got trimmed off that had nothing to do with that too. So
well, I hear that time thing, especially in the 10 years song. The concept of trying to project yourself forward so you can look back is completely fascinating in that sense. You know, how you kind of manipulate time in that way with your own head.
And that's what Time Machine, the song, was about too, which is funny because 10 years from now is that. But then Time Machine, that song originally had a totally different chorus that was really melodic. And, you know, the beginning was the same, but then there was originally other lyrics. And then it slowly, I was just like this idea of time machines, but it wasn't like there's no time machine. It was like, I wish I had a time machine or something like that. I wish we had time machines and we could fly around. And then it was just getting all flowery. And then Stone was like, oh, I got an idea. Took the whole chorus off, sent me back this really cool, like just way more guttural blues based thing. And then I just sang My Mama Says There's No Time Machines. Like I just like first take, boom, sang it and sent it back. And we're like, okay, now we're talking. Like we got out of our heads, got into our muscles. And that's what happened there.
I might be stretching a little bit here, but you know, with a lot of artists that I've been talking to, there is a lot of escapism for obvious reasons for the past few years. And you know, for some artists who have been talking about, you know, sort of Pale Blue Dot style going to space to get away from things, you know, the other side seems to be talking about this manipulating time in a way, although I might not say as interesting as you've been able to pull off here. I feel like that might, if that's even on the right path, that sort of wraps around into what becomes, you know, the lead single, I guess, with I Am Your Country. Where did this concept come from? Because this is a song about personifying the actual country speaking to us, correct?
Yeah, but it originally came from a lyric that was about a father speaking to kids. you know, because I went through a divorce a few years ago that was really rough and had some parental alienation I was dealing with. So I was sort of like talking to kids, and then it was just way too personal. And then with the stuff, I live in Minneapolis, and when George Floyd was murdered, like it just all of a sudden I was listening to this track by Matt Chamberlain. I just liked the track without any vocals. I just listened to it for fun. And I just started singing a variation on that lyric. And I was like, I started singing it from the point of view as I'm your country. And then the rest of it sort of shifted and became like more abstract. And it just felt good for me to sing it. And I was just sort of doing it for myself. And then I sent it to Stone. I thought the record was finished at this point. So I was like, hey, check out this. And he was like, oh dude, that's going to be the first single. I was like, what the, I was just doing it for my own personal artistic expression at that point.
Yeah. New song's best song. That's always the game, right? New song's best song.
Blows, yeah.
I think it's the most visceral, immediate thing on the record, and it really is the first opportunity of Mason and Matt collaborating in a sense. And it's Matt's tracks that he's writing right now are so spacious and so like drum aggressive in like this kind of John Bonham, like not a drum machine at all sort of way, but in a like, I'm a powerhouse drummer. And if you saw me playing in a room, your jaw would drop because I'm slaying my, you know, my instrument. And so, you know, for me, that between that lyric and that groove and the space and that track, I was just like, I was convinced that it was, you know, it's our best song. You know, it just really struck me that way.
Do you all find that this song, in a way that songs do allow themselves to change with the world? You know, here's a song that was written obviously with Trump as president, and now there is a possibility of a future once again. I mean, do you find that this song starts to speak in a different way?
Yeah, probably. I mean, it does feel good. I haven't heard it since this last week, so I should listen to it again. I think it would probably hit me different. Yeah, I mean, I love that about songs, right? Like, mm-hmm. I mean, like sometime I'll write a song 10 years and then it comes up and somebody be like, this song is about this that's happening right now, isn't it? And I'll listen, I'll be like, yeah, it is. I don't know how that happens, but sometimes it's so cool and trippy.
There's so many great moments in here. I mean, this seriously is, I was so blown away by this whole record. So I don't think I properly complimented
that's
you all
so
on
nice.
This.
That's yeah. so, thank you so much. That's really, that's awesome. Thank you.
Yeah, it plays great loud and probably plays great soft. I just haven't tried it like that yet. I do want to hit a few things outside exactly of the record. And first off, this record also, as the press release will tell you, marks the return of Loose Groove Records, Stone. This is, you started with Regan Hagar, right?
Yeah,
Regan. Yeah. Uh-huh. And of course, I think that was the other thing. That's one of my all-time favorite Loose Groove things right here. With Chicago
what is
Cab.
That?
That's your Chicago Cab great. Soundtrack.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
So
that's awesome.
So amazing stuff on there.
Yeah.
What does this mean for the label? I mean, is this really a full-on thing again? I mean, do you guys have bigger plans than just this Painted Shield record?
Yeah, we're, you know, Regan and I have been friends for 30 years. Regan was the drummer in Malfunction. So I was seeing Regan's band play before I even started playing an instrument, basically, or very close to it. You know, back when I was in Green River and just starting to even like think about wanting to play music, he was in Malfunction and they were doing Discharge, speed metal, and then halftime crazy, you know, Kiss tributes. And that's the start of it for me in terms of seeing young musicians that were amateurs, but also totally adventurous and playing live shows and succeeding in just totally charming and exhilarating a bar with 20 people in it. And at the time, or a club or whatever. And you know, at the time it foundationally changed me in terms of like thinking about heavy metal and punk rock and disco and how all those things mean a lot to me. And yet at that time, particularly, that wasn't what you did in eighth grade in 1978. You either, you know, you liked disco or you liked rock, you know, or, you know, that was my perception. You know, I'm sure there's people that were smarter than me, but so, you know, going back to Regan and then our years in Brad and all of that, we did Loose Groove. We had some success with it, not financially, but we achieved a lot. And then with the opportunities, you know, with this record being done and with some other records that I've been kind of helping shepherd in Seattle, I knew that there was an opportunity. And because The Orchard was interested in Painted Shield and also interested in Loose Groove, we connect, made a good connection there, and have a great person at the Orchard who's now part of our Loose Groove world. And we're just going to keep putting records out. Hopefully another Painted Shield, if they'll sign with Loose Groove. That'll be good to see how that works out. I don't know. They may go on to bigger and better things. Who knows? They might leave me. I mean, no, they won't. They can't. Brittany Davis, we're going to put her record out. So she's making a solo record right now. So that's a really exciting thing to kind of hear her. There's also one record that I'm the most excited about right now, which is the Living, which is Duff McKagan and Greg Gilmore. Duff McKagan from Guns N' Roses, who was in all my favorite punk bands back in the day. And Greg Gilmore, who was a drummer in Mother Love Bone. They have a record called 1982. They made in 1982 that's never come out before. And it's all Duff McKagan original, you know, amazing hardcore, you know, punk rock / proto grunge songs that was never released. And I mean, the fact that we are able to kind of put it out and that it hasn't ever come out before, and that Duff's excited about talking about it, and Greg, it's really an amazing record, and it really shows how central Duff was to what happened in Seattle. Although he doesn't get talked about, you know, he went on to Guns N' Roses, so that kind of takes over the narrative so much, but he was the guy, and clearly this record proves that in terms of when you hear it now and you kind of go, wow, I hear elements of 10 Minute Warning, and I hear elements of the Farts, and I hear elements of Guns N' Roses, and all these influential, you know, bands. It's cool. So lots of stuff going on there.
Yeah. I had Duff on the show earlier than was this year, last year or something like that. His new song is fantastic too. And I've heard that there is one more Brad record. I mean, Losing Sean, you know, I don't think any of us knew that what can we expect from the next Brad record? Because I've got them all, you know.
Yeah, that's great. Well, you know, there's a lot of Sean solo stuff for sure that is going to eventually come out, and there is a Brad record, and we're sort of in the process now of kind of finalizing mixes and making sure that it's as good as it can be, but we haven't quite got to the finish line yet there. But you know, there's for sure 10 songs. It's just it's a matter of now figuring out how far to sort of massage those tracks to kind of to make them as good as they can be. And I, you know, that's going to not be the easiest. It's not the easiest journey to figure that out, but some beautiful Sean Smith vocals that people haven't heard yet. So I look forward to that as well.
What an amazing, amazing vocalist. I mean, I've got Interiors behind me, but you know, The Day Brings, just, we still spin that on FPK. It's one of our all time favorites. Just nice. Incredible. Mason, last album was 2018. That's probably the usual amount of time for most most artists, unless you're talking about Pearl Jam, of course. They'll make you wait a little bit longer. Yeah. But you got more in the works for yourself?
Yeah, I've got about six new songs I'm working on, so six or seven. So yeah, I'm hopefully start recording sometime in the next year, and hopefully maybe it'll be Loose Groove. That would be awesome. Put something.
Yeah,
on. Yeah, definitely. I'm definitely
get that contract signed now.
Do it on Zoom. definitely. And it's been cool. I mean, there's been so much. We're working on a bunch of stuff for Painted Shield too. So it's, you know, like, it's cool to have both things going at the same time like that.
I'll wrap up, of course. Don't, I hope you'll permit me with one or two Pearl Jam questions here, because Gigaton did come out. You've not been able to tour that, obviously, as no one has. Does that give you a different relationship with an album when, you know, in this, that you haven't been able to touch it in the same way that you would have otherwise?
It's just such a weird time. I don't know what, I don't know what's weird in terms of the big picture. It's weird to not have, you know, to have gotten, we rehearsed up till like right before we left. So we were kind of like hitting, like we were ready to go. The songs were sounding good. And it was going to be a great tour. And since then, you know, I barely picked up my guitar, so I'm going to have to, it's the longest time without playing Pearl Jam songs, which is weird because we've got so many, and I sort of, I'm able to kind of keep them all just kind of in my head in terms of being able to remember where my fingers are. And I'm terrified that we've gone so long now that I'm actually going to be looking at a set list kind of going, I've had dreams about it already where I'm like, you know, the band is just about to start and I'm struggling to get out onto stage, and then I can see the set list and I know that I haven't practiced them and I'm about to go out there and just not know anything. But it's just a weird, we're just in a weird time and a weird year. And I'm not sure what to make of it, but I'm proud of the record. And, you know, I really think it was a victory, and I'm so happy to be in the band. And it's so much of this stuff and how I'm able to generate and try different things is due to sort of the creativity and the journey that I've taken with those guys over the last 30 years. So a lot of this emanates from my relationship with that band and how we've treated each other and how we've kind of moved through different eras of, you know, you can spend a lot of time, you can have eras where you're like, oh, this is not that great, or I don't want to do this. And then you look back and kind of go, why wasn't I just looking at what I could do as opposed to like what wasn't working? And I think that's the lesson learned at this point.
Well, you said 30 years. I mean, this year marks 30 years for you. I think it was October, if I remember right, or in November, but, yeah. But I don't know if you guys would have been celebrating in a big way if there, you know, had been any plans like that. I'll tell you, as a fan, I've really personally been hoping for more of those box sets like you did with 10 Verses and Vitology.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you ever think that the at least the No Code and Yield is going to come? Do you all ever have plans to follow those up?
I'm sure it is. I think at this point we're slowing down because we're old and we know we've got plenty of time and that there's plenty of time for, you know, for looking back. So I think that there's everyone's kind of in a pause right now. Everyone's just trying to keep their home lives together given the circumstances of what's happening right now and how much everything is telling you just to pay attention to your, you know, the closest things in front of you. But there'll be opportunities for that. I'm sure that those will come out, as will more sort of live shows and stuff like that. But I'm honestly looking forward to, you know, recording more music. I think Gigaton touched on some really cool new territory and sort of there was some doors open there that I hope we keep walking through.
I mean, musically, I love seeing where you guys go. Lyrically, of course, you're, especially with, you know, talking about Greta and everything and the environments. I mean, again, I'll say what, you know, we were talking about earlier, that now we have a hope for the future once again.
Yeah.
A hope that I don't think a lot of us have felt for a long time. A hope that I feel like you all have captured in this Painted Shield record. So, you know, if there's more of that to mine, I certainly would love to hear it.
Yeah, that's very nice. I'm glad there's some optimism in there.
Yeah, no doubt.
Well, Mason, Stone, thank you both so much for taking the time to talk about it again. This Painted Shield record, it's huge. Everyone should listen to it. Everybody should buy it. I hope you guys end up pushing this to radio. We're going to be playing it at FPK regardless. I think Level is going to be our track that we're going to be hitting so really hard. So,
oh, great.
And to many more Painted Shield records in the future as well.
Thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it.
All right. Thank you both. Take care. Have a good one.
Have a good one.
Now, back in 2012, Stone and I jumped on the phone to talk about the record that he had just released with Brad called United We Stand. I want to include that interview here. Along with Brad, we did talk a little bit about Pearl Jam and Public Radio, which at that point was Public Radio Week when we taped this. So part two of Kyle Meredith with Stone Gossard. So you've got the new Brad record out, and congratulations on that one, especially
Thanks.
Coming so quick on the heels of Best Friends. Because it did. It took, 8 years to get Best Friends out, and now you've done a 2-year turnaround on this one.
Yeah, and, the funny thing about Best Friends was that we had that record almost basically recorded, and it sat for 3 or 4 years before we ever actually got it out. So it was a long stint of not recording. So by the time Best Friends came out, we really hadn't recorded together in 5 or 6 years, so we were all definitely itching to write new music and get back into it. But we're real excited to still be a band and kind of be looking back on 20 years playing together and just feeling real good about the fact that we have some pretty cool original music that we've written together over the last 20 years that still makes us happy.
Yeah. You mentioned 20 years. I mean, you've done the nostalgia thing once already last year. And I don't know that, I think it was always said Brad was never really a side project, but it was always kind of looked at as your other band.
It's a semantics thing. People talk about that all the time. And I mean, we don't really spend a lot of time describing it as anything, but it's a band. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's a band that doesn't get as much attention as Pearl Jam, which makes sense because Pearl Jam sells a huge amount of records, and And I'm certainly more known for it. But, you know, I think there's just a feeling that when you say something's a side project, it sort of devalues it a little bit. And
right.
I think everyone in the band feels like it's a real band, but it functions on its own clock.
Does it age differently than Pearl Jam does? Does Brad age differently?
You know, I think every band is different, and they're just fascinating to be in. I recommend them to anyone out there because they all have their different characteristics, and really, when you do collaborative, you know, music projects or any collaborative artistic design project with multiple personalities, you're faced with a whole series of you know, sort of thrills and challenges in terms of you know, the thrills being when you write a song, you go from not having a song to writing a song, and everyone is playing this role in sort of its how you play it and how it was written, and the sort of construction of it is one thing, and then the performance of it is another. But and how your strengths and weaknesses all play toward the originality of that sound, and how, you know, everyone's aesthetic view of what music should be, and where they kind of hear the groove, and how, where they hear the backbeat, and how they feel the song. It's really different, and each, you know, each group will have its own personality. So it's really fun to be in groups that have been together for a long time, because one, there's a lot of you have a lot of wisdom that's at your fingertips that you don't really talk about it too much, but we really have a way of jumping right in and helping each other out in our songs. And you also have a lot of gratitude about just this sense of, like, wow, this is what it feels like to be in a really, like, successful marriage,
right.
Where you look back on and go, how many different times could we have separated or broken up when things got hard? But if we had, we would have never made this record, or we've never had this song, or we never had the experience of going to play in this show. Or so they're kind of triumphs of will in a way, because you know, collaborative things are difficult to maintain, and it's tension is part of it, and conflict is innately part of it, and how you work through those things and get back to that feeling where everyone's in the room looking at the same blank piece of paper or whatever it is, same blank piece of tape, in terms of recording something, that's where the thrill comes from, because it's like no other thing.
Right. You know, you use the word marriage, and a lot of musicians kind of describe bands that have been around for a while as a marriage, but not many people do get a chance to be in several marriages at once.
That's right. I'm a polygamist.
Yeah, that's right. Musical polygamist.
And that's part of, you know, the difficulties. It's very easy. It's much easier to be in one band. When you share loyalties between two bands, it can be difficult. You know, it does create, you know, bands are used to just, the way a band usually survives, it's like, you know, us against the world, you know, and when there's that sort of, when there's other things going on, you have another situation that's us against the world and another situation that's us against the world, there's inherently sort of conflicts in that. So, you know, but that's part of it. And you know, I feel pretty good about the fact that they're both still functioning after 20 years. So I'm very proud of both of those places.
Yeah. Me and McCready were just talking about Matt Cameron's kind of schedule doing the exact same thing this year.
Yeah, the most successful drummer in rock history, I think. That's what I'm going to say.
Yeah, that's got to be another year for him.
Two huge bands out playing festival gigs, you know, where he's a writing and, you know, critical member to both of those bands in a way that, is beyond.
And I'm sure the fans would love to see that double bill one day, but God, how horrible would that be for Matt?
Well, you know, we could do it. We just, you know, we could just each play, you know, 10 or 12 songs, and it would be fine. It sounds fun. I think we should do it.
Back to Brad, one of the interesting things I was noticing, and I don't know if it was intentional or if it has anything to do with each other, but there's a bit of a contrast and even a call and answer to your album titles with this one and the last one. You have Best Friends with a question mark, and then a bit of an answer with United We Stand.
Mm-hmm.
Any of that intentional?
Well, Regan Hagar isn't sort of, well, United We Stand was actually a song that we recorded for this record that actually didn't make the record, but we decided to name the record after that. So
the creative curiosity about the track that we still have, we're still holding. So it's actually it's a really good song. But you know, we really have to, every time we get back together, we go through a process of trying to believe in this situation again and trying to be there for each other, even though we know it's this sort of, you know, it's had these struggles. So, you know, I think it's a challenge to us to kind of, it's a reminder, you know, if we're out there complaining and mad at each other, then, you know, and if we have a record called United We Stand and we're not really united, then we'll feel foolish and hopefully work it out with each other. But
nice way to force yourself into it.
And I don't know if you've seen the artwork or not, too, but it's also it's a pretty provocative album cover of it's a picture of Ben Franklin on the $100 bill with a with his eyes blacked out and a little bit of blood dripping out of his mouth too. So there's a some sort of political comment I think that Regan and Sean were making that is to be interpreted, but you got to check it out.
Yeah, no, it is great, and you know, I think that little drop of blood stands out almost immediately on it too. So
yeah,
really well done. So what does it take for you guys to get together at this point, to get Brad together? Because you all, even outside of your musical lives, I mean, you have your philanthropy life and obviously your personal lives. So what's the dynamics of getting Brad together?
Well, it's everybody has to work at it. You know, it's you gotta make, everyone has families, everyone has kids, everybody has, you know, other responsibilities, and it requires money and it requires energy from all of us to kind of to get it together. So, but it's our dream, and it's something that, you know, if we haven't done it for a while, we're all thinking about it. So, some things you do because you just have to do them, and that's one of these situations where it's like, we've influenced each other and been creative partners for so long. There's no turning back. You just gotta keep going, and it just keeps paying off because we keep pleasing each other with our songs and our playing, and we're achieving something.
You brought in three songs to this one, three Gossard Pin songs, I guess. Miles of Rope, Diamond Blues, and Last Bastion.
Yeah, I mean, I think, but we all really got in there on everybody's songs. But, you know, in terms of bringing in the main riffs, yeah, those are the ones that I wrote. I'm pretty excited about those ones.
Yeah, Last Bastion has this real nice, dark, almost Sabbath feel to the guitar
part
going on. it's a bit different than I think I've ever heard from you.
I have my inner Sabbath is just lurking out there. I need half steps, a lot of half steps, descending half steps.
That's
a fun one. It's been really fun to play, and it's a real simple A B thing, and you can turn on your fuzz pedal, and you know, there's no you don't have to hold back on that.
Sure. And there's another track on there actually, Teabag, that's not yours, but it really does sound like vintage Stone Gossard.
Yeah, Regan Hagar. I think his first songwriting credit for Brad, if I'm not mistaken, he might have had another one, but he's very proud of that one. And that was actually recorded, you know, back in the Best Friends session. So that one's been around for a while, but it finally, we went back into the vaults and found that one, and we just went, oh, this has got to be on the record. So we're excited that there's plenty of up tempo stuff on it, you know, or sort of, you know, rock songs, and we get the sort of slow jams on there as well, but we're feeling pretty good about the balance on the record.
Yeah. One of the other big news bits about Brad is you guys are actually going to do the re-releasing of the back catalog. Is that right?
Yeah, that's what we're working on right now, is locating all the master tapes and locating all the artwork files and trying to get it together to re-release starting with the first two records, we hope.
Yeah. Anything we can expect from that? I mean, were there lots of other tracks left off of that, or is it basically just going to be a reshine?
We don't know, because we're just really sort of going back and inspecting it. I don't expect there going to be a lot of other tracks, or maybe something that we haven't thought about, but we really haven't even started that process yet. So we're sort of looking around, but I'm not expecting a huge amount of new material.
We talked about this just a second ago a little bit, but you have been dealing quite a bit in nostalgia lately, kind of retracing the steps of your career for the past few years.
Yeah.
Is that something you do well? Are you a nostalgic person, or is this
I'm so excited about it being 21 years and not thinking about, you know, particularly in terms of Pearl Jam, because, you know, the process of of having Cameron made that movie, and then, you know, when we did all the re-release, and I think probably Jeff and Ed were more, you know, had more to do with it in terms of like going back and actually doing the work of going back through all that stuff. You know, I didn't really spend a whole lot of time in that process, but by the time we were done doing press for the last record and talking about the 20th anniversary and then the 20th anniversary show and then the movie coming out, you know, it some of those things are sort of inevitable that people are going to sort of look at 20 years as sort of significant. But you know, I think I'm always looking at the long shot, and I think we've got our best record ahead of us still, yeah. Pearl Jam and Brad. So I don't feel old. I don't feel like I want to stop or I want to keep looking back. I definitely want to keep looking forward. So, you know, at 40 years, maybe we'll have another assessment, but I think everyone will be pretty shy about doing anything more in that regard.
Yeah. Are you going to continue the box sets that you've been doing?
Yeah, I think so. I think that maybe there's one more for PJ, but I don't see that on the schedule anywhere. So that's probably, maybe 2 years from now or something like that. Mm-hmm. Or as the records get to be 20, I think maybe that's when they'll start to come out. So, but I really don't know.
Yeah.
But, I think part of our thing has always been, like, trying to find cool packaging that, like, is for like the super fans that are really like they want to see the history, they want to hold it, they want to get a poster, they want to find, you know, these cool bits and pieces, and you know, Jeff and Ed have just done such a tremendous job of creating these packages that are worth it because they, you know, they really the band really puts a lot of love into them. So I think that always will be part of sort of what we'll do, but I don't know when the next one's coming out.
Yeah. It shouldn't be overlooked, though, that you do have a personal record that did turn 10 years old last year, and that was Bayleaf. That just went under the radar. No celebration. No, I'm going to play Bayleaf front to back.
I think the Bayleaf record is still stewing down there. People are, you know, still checking it out. I'm real proud of Bayleaf, I probably have another solo record in me at some point in the next couple of years. I'll release something. So I write a lot. So and it's fun to write lyrics, and it's fun to sort of as much fun as it is to be in a band and the collaborative thing, it's also really fun to just kind of wake up and go into the studio and just say, this is what we're doing. I know how it goes. This is what I want to say. This is the groove. This is how the bass goes. This is how that's fun as well. It's just to be, you know, a fascist.
Right.
And, and so you got to embrace your inner communist and your inner fascist when you're in music.
I love those. I do. I love that record. I still listen to Bayleaf often. In fact, I think I give Pigeon some spins pretty occasionally over here at WFBK. So.
Oh, great! Thanks. Yeah, that's it. I always thought that lyric was pretty special. I wasn't done sleeping around at that point.
Yeah.
I am done sleeping around at this point, though. So just so you know,
it's good stuff. So you know, hopefully, when we see another solo record out there, I mean, it's a
well. You'll be the first person I'll send it to. I know now that there's a DJ out there that cares. So
exactly.
I didn't know before, but
well,
now I do.
You had some tracks that you were putting up online there for a little bit, though, but they just never got compiled onto a proper disc, I guess.
Yeah, it's all, you know, spending more time working with Brad, there's only so much time in the day. I'm a dad, and I'm married, and I'm, you know, madly in love, and I'm, you know, I got my mom and my dad. There's always something I got to do, so sometimes your solo stuff will just go by the wayside, but I got it all, and eventually it'll all come out, and people can look at it and see what they feel about it.
Right. Well, so there's only a couple PJ shows. You got a string of Brad shows. How do you plan on spending the rest of the year?
Well, hopefully, you know, there's PJ recording, and we'll be doing some more of that and trying to finish a record this year. And and then hopefully, you know, adding on more Brad dates as well. We're up rehearsing now for our West Coast, and then we'll be on the East Coast in May. And we got Happy Chichester is playing with Brad again, which is just
love
great.
Happy.
He'll open up some shows for us as well. And we're just having a blast. We're going back to the catalog and figuring out what we're going to play and figuring out how to play these new ones. So hopefully, yeah, hopefully a lot more of just these groups.
Yeah, Happy's from right up the road. I got to meet him a couple times last year.
He's just the most delightful.
He's great.
Yeah.
Worth asking, actually, how is Ed doing? Because I know there was a bit of report there that you know, he had to cancel his tour because of some damage he had had. Is he doing all right at this point?
Yeah, he hurt his back a little bit carrying a bench, and he just picked it up the wrong way and slammed it into a tree trying to navigate his backyard, I guess, or something. And he just tweaked his back, and he's just trying to get well. And it's just the issue is just he's got to do the right physical therapy for the next, you know, 6 weeks to make it all work again. So he knew that, he realized that he had to take a break. His arm was kind of going to sleep, and he wasn't getting better. And so he's in the process of getting healthy right now. And we just, you know, been thinking about him and text him and tell him I love him. And I think he's, I think he's improving, but it's been a little bit, I'm sure it's been a trial for him. So I'm just wishing him the best. And I think everything's going to be fine, but we're waiting to see how he's doing.
Would you have a second to actually wax a little bit on public radio? It's Public Radio Music Month, actually, that we're doing right now.
Sure, absolutely.
And you guys, I mean, you've been in the business now that you've seen pretty much all sides of radio and how it deals. And you understand how public radio works, I guess, too, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I write my check to KXP and KPLU every year. So, I don't know, is it KPLU in Seattle? Maybe at KUOW, I think that's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's something that's worth paying for sure. Non-commercial radio is, you know, you look at the impact of KEXP and what they're able to accomplish using a methodology that is absolutely against every big commercial radio station's strategy over the last 10 years, which is consolidation and controlled playlists and, you know, payola and you know, sort of collusion, basically. And you look at KXP and you just see, you know, like a band, you see a group of people collaborating together and trusting each other and growing their style, each individual DJ really having a unique take and a unique style, and people really responding to that and really supporting it because it's valuable, it's worth it, and their influence in terms of, you know, their influence is so far reaching now, and you know, much more so than, you know, than probably even the amount of money that they're taking in. I think that if they were paid for their influence on a bigger scale, they would be you know, it would be great. You know, and I remember listening to KCMU at University of Washington, and, you know, getting turned on to songs like "You Might Like Me Better If We Slept Together," you know, or
right.
You know, sort of those first time when you're hearing these songs that were like, "Wow, this is not, I didn't hear this on KSW or, you know, one of the rock stations," or, you know. You know, hearing Subhumans, or, you know, Pearl Jam's a big supporter of public radio. Public radio's been great. We listen to everybody, you know, tunes in. It's like, I want to hear Warren Olney on To the Point. I think that, you know, his that show and the style that he exemplifies shows the, you know, the real way to find the broadest perspective on an issue in a really, with a lot of wisdom and a lot of it's just interesting and mm-hmm. and powerful. So it's a big deal.
Yeah. Well, we certainly appreciate the kind words. I don't think I could say it better. And actually, we appreciate, you know, everything Pearl Jam's done for public radio, and you know, we try to give it back tenfold. So. So thanks for taking the time.
Yep, Kyle, thank you.
For everything. So, and we'll see you around on this Brad tour, and we look forward to all the new music you're going to be throwing our way.
All right, cool. Thanks for the support.
Have a great day, Stone.
All right, man.
My thanks, Stone Gossard, Mason Jennings, the self-titled Painted Shield record. And thanks to you for checking out this episode. Before you get out, please do hit that subscribe button. Again, 3 new interviews every single week. Gives you a great way to keep up with all of your favorite artists. iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, again, where the video version of this lies as well. And then after that, head to WFPK.org. That's where I do a show Monday through Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern, an hour full of song premieres, music news, anniversary spins, bonus interviews. Again, Monday through Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern at WFPK.org. Consequence of Sound has your music and film news. You can also find me on the social medias, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all of them at Kyle Meredith. I do hope you like and follow along there as well. That does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you. With professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.